Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
Wow. Okay, so it appears as though we are archiving and broadcasting live finally. Little hiccup there in the stream, but it'll be okay. Anyway, Saturday night, unusual because for many years I did not broadcast live on a Saturday, but this is going out live. Of course, most of you are going to catch it further on down the stream via your Fondle Slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour. I know that. But it is the 19th day of June 2021, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, as I speak. Doesn't mean that's when you're going to hear it. This is part three of the series on my personal experimentation with psilocybin, which was for a medicinal purpose. And if you caught the first two episodes, you know what the problem was. You know what the experience was like. Now we're going to talk about the results. And once again, with me is Captain Trips, who is somebody known. If you have listened to my show before, you might be aware of Captain Trips for sure. Anyway, I'm gonna just get right to the show in a second here. But I also found, by the way, I thought I lost it, but I found it. Our discussion, Captain Trips, before. We went live with it when we were talking about, you know, how to do the show, and I was saying,
yeah.
So maybe we'll make it into a four-part series, three official parts, and then an addendum, like for the setup. With your
sounds
permission, because I recorded that and said I wasn't sure if I was going to use it. So you're cool with that?
Oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I remember you did say you didn't know if you were going to use it, but that's fine.
Okay, excellent. So. That's what we're doing, and as I said, in the first two live broadcast pieces, because we had that discussion totally offline, you and me, but in the first two broadcast pieces, like I said, I basically described what the problem was. The PTSD issue was really starting to crush me, literally, and this is a personal story, once again. I'm not giving anybody medical advice or advice when it comes to psychology, because... although they put psychology with medicine, I don't. Okay, so I'm not giving you psychological advice. I'm telling you my story, and in three parts, and I've laid it out. I don't know, maybe some people would think this is not a good story to tell in public, but I'm one of these people who says, no, let's get to it. Let's see what this really means. And quite frankly, as I said before, I mean, it's not like I'm... not accustomed to the use of substances which are mind or mood altering for recreational purposes, and also, you know, medically. I've been through the mill, and at this point I don't trust big pharma, and I am totally amazed that psilocybin is really only now getting serious consideration and being studied for depression, various levels of trauma, whether it be PTSD for real, not this, oh, I've got PTSD now because something bad happened to me. No, you don't have PTSD if something bad happened to you. They created a whole new category of it. Anyway, sorry, I'm not going to digress into that. But my point is that there are a variety of traumatic things which do leave a mark on an individual. And even stranger is when you come out of trauma and attempt to, return to some normalcy, and you know, hold up air quotes for that one, because what is normal to somebody else may not be normal to you. Now, I may bring Mrs. O in for the last half hour of this discussion to verify and back up what it is I'm saying about the results. I have found some remarkably... Some of these results that you're going to hear about are going to sound like they're bad. What I'm going to say is that some of those bad results are a hell of an improvement anyway. But honestly, the way I feel about this, and as I've spoken to many people and mentioned on the show many times, overall, this is a life-saving thing that happened for me. So... I want to tell the story. I want to market. I know it's not scientific. I know it's, again, Not medical advice, not psychological advice for somebody who's challenged. I can't tell you what to do. I'm just telling you what I did and what happened. And I'm not even being specific because I'm not even going to give a formula for anybody to follow here. All I'm trying to do is further the conversation for consideration. Anyway, Captain Trips, I don't know. I think I covered it all and gave everybody the up-to-speed moments, but what do you think needs to be said about this? And obviously, I mean, we spent 2 hours each time talking about what was the damage, basically, and what was the experience like, although I got to tell you, I'm sure I fell very short of explaining a great deal of what happened during these many now applications of psilocybin, which were self-administered. Time slowed down for me, so honestly, a lot of things happened that, you know, you wouldn't think you could even cram into 4 or 5 hours at a time. But it worked out that way. And, anyhow, now we get to what's different. What did it do? What do you think needs to be covered here, or what do you, have a question about up to this point?
I think anyone that's listened to the first two parts, I think we adequately covered, the roots of all this, and I think you did adequately cover the actual experiences, and I don't think you have to get down and down into the weeds and into the details. I personally think that's a personal thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you adequately gave a thumbnail of how it was for you and how you did it. And some of the feelings that you had, and some of the things that it brought up for you. But now I think it's perfect that now we hear what's coming out on the other side. What has it done in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this discussion needs to be getting out there more. Because this is definitely a useful thing for people. It's not something that one should take lightly and just mess around with, but. There's a lot of people I think walking around today that could be helped significantly by this.
Mm.
And if nothing else, maybe someone that was opposed to this type of therapy will give it a second look.
Right.
It's natural, and quite frankly, I think it's a whole lot safer than the crap that comes out of the big pharmaceutical companies for the most part. There's a place for some of their poison, but not not to the levels that we see it in society now.
Mm.
So I think it'd be perfect to hear, because it's been a couple of weeks since you and I've talked about it.
Right.
So I'm anxious myself to hear if you've had any more improvements beyond the ones that I knew about from the last month.
Well, continuously, and that's the funny thing is even after the experience itself is over. I am feeling progressive improvements that are coming into play one by one. Mm-hmm. And let me not speak generally of it. Also, something I did miss in discussing the experience is, mm-hmm. and here is where I will give a little bit of advice, okay?
Okay.
You tell me if I'm wrong to say this, but I don't think I am. I would not suggest that if you are desperately suffering and you are trying to utilize this to alleviate suffering, I would strongly suggest that you do not do this in an isolated way, that someone, at least one trusted person, is around you and not partaking as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, this is I actually wouldn't recommend anybody do it by themselves. I mean, unless you're very experienced with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that there needs to be and someone who is the designated driver, so to speak.
Right.
In case, the
reason is, I mean, I went into some very dark places internally, and I don't know how that would have went. without being able to sort of check outside of my own head for a minute and see what's going on. I really, really got immersed in some very deep, dark corners.
Sure.
So, you know, I just wanted to throw that out because I didn't say that. And, of course, it was Mrs. O who was the trusted partner here. But still, it could be a friend. It's somebody who you trust is who I would do this with. If you're attempting to alleviate pain, look, if you're partying, I mean, figure it out yourself. I mean, what can I tell you? I got no advice.
Yeah.
And I have tried it by myself, but not at first. Okay.
I mean, once you get some experience under your belt, and I'm not saying, and I'm personally not saying this from a place of experience. I've never done this. I'm interested, but I've never done this personally. But I just know from other things I've done that that you don't want to do this. You don't want to do this without someone there, in case something goes wrong. Or, like you said, to just be able to kind of bring yourself back to reality for a brief period. I'm sure you spend a lot of time out of it.
Well, and one other thing that I don't know if I mentioned during the experience show is that I had, screaming nightmare experience with, and people have told me that I am incorrect about this, but I got to tell you, your blotter type stuff, the things that somebody made in their kitchen sink or in a lab somewhere, created nightmarish experiences that were not useful to me. And of course it was many years ago, but still, for some reason, I feel as though the natural thing in and of itself is very different. So, all right. Let's get to the results, and let's start with stuff that I didn't expect at all. For anybody who's listened to me and really pays attention to what I say knows I very likely suffer from a variety of chronic pain ailments, and I do. I have injuries that are nagging. I have various neurological damages in different parts of my system. Between pain being fired off and numbness, I mean, I've got mixed neuropathy and all kinds of pains which come up due to nerve damage, okay? What this has done over the years, just to back it up a little, is made me weak. It's taken away some of my mobility. It's taken away a lot of my strength. And it's not just because I'm getting old. Although I'm sure that's a factor. Okay. And again, you abuse your body enough. Eventually, there will be consequences for it. I'm sure of this. But I was experiencing a lot of things. People might have been aware that I walked with a cane for years because I really, if I did not, there would be a vice-like kind of sensation that would hit my back. And I would literally become immobilized. My lower body was hard to move. Even though I was given a hint in 2011 that I might be suffering from Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, I fought forward anyway. I should be dead by now, generally speaking, if that was the case. But slowly it felt like it was coming, where I'm numbing up, I'm painting up. I mean, I literally feel as though I'm a marbled piece of meat when it comes to sensation. I've literally put a power drill accidentally into part of my thigh before, just a little bit, and it didn't hurt. It was an accident, by the way. It wasn't, just in case anybody thinks that, but what I'm saying is that there are parts of my lower body that I really don't feel, and it's intermittent. It switches around a little bit, it moves a little bit, I have neuropathy in my limbs. My hands are not so bad, but my shoulders and my arms feel it sometimes. And my feet, my legs, all of that. And I know that there's parts of my back that I probably don't feel, and there's parts of my back that are in pain for no reason. So I didn't expect anything related to the psilocybin to change anything, but it did. Since I would say the second or third experience with it, I have not required my cane. And I mean, I could not walk more than 50 feet before my back would lock up without the cane. Plus, it helped me balance and everything else. I haven't used it in months, ever since I basically, like I said, second or third experience. I'm stronger. Not only am I stronger, but I have not restored mobility, but mobility that is reminiscent of what I had maybe 10, 15 years ago. You know, close to it, not quite, which I did not expect. I'm still in pain all the time, but the sort of searing and throbbing of it is reduced somewhat. This is body pain stuff, by the way, so I'm not even talking about psychological things. I have no clue exactly why that is happening, except that, you know, one could say, well, you know, if this really works on the brain, why would it ignore the rest of the neurology? So I'll tell you that just physically, this has been an improvement. I am not as, now, I'm not as fatigued, but there's another reason for that. And that is that I actually get sleep, which I didn't. It's going to sound crazy, but I mean, I slept in, you know, hour and a half clips for about, I don't know, 7 years. So I can actually sleep like, you know, 6 hours, 7 hours, which is remarkable to me and feels a lot better, allows me to rest, allows me to recharge a bit. And I wake up with a greater disposition, and this has all happened increasingly better with, I would say, what am I up to? Maybe about a dozen uses now. Over, you know, I know it sounds kind of crazy. I can't remember what the first date was, but it's over, you know, it's not something I did in a week, but it was over several months. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't remember. Time is just, yeah, time's distorted for me at this point, too. But I want to say it was in March, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere in there. But, I mean, every couple of weeks, it might have been further back, come to think of it. But you know what? March makes perfect sense, because I know that one was very much close to when my birthday was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already starting to feel better around my birthday, which was odd. Usually I don't mark my birthday in my head either, which is another thing. You know, my memory improved. See, and everybody's going, well, this all sounds positive. My memory, I've gotten more clarity. And I don't have a bad memory to begin with, but I was starting to get sort of short-term memory issues, I felt. And I wasn't sure if I was exhausted.
That's all from the part of the brain that this actually works in, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so short-term memory increased. Now, I'll tell you a couple of negative things. Because of being able to access more clarity in some past memories, I've had to confront some very conflicting things in my mind, in myself, that have, and I've done this very quietly, even Mrs. O probably does not know, that that I have quite a bit of conflict within me on a daily basis that I am sorting through, and that's a continuous psychological process. But you know what? I should go back to the physical first, huh? When I got the whatever it was, I'm not sure if it was COVID because I never got tested. But in March or April of 2020, I was very sick, and I was sick for months. And during that very same time period, I don't have much vision in either one of my eyes, but I totally lost vision in my right eye. And I was getting, you know, back maybe shadows and things. Now, I don't use more than one eye at a time. That's part of my condition. I mean, I don't have a lot of eyesight to begin with. But as crazy as this might sound, a year later, and after struggling with it and trying to patch it and trying to rest it and, you know, taking Ocuvites and whatever, seems like the psilocybin kicked it back over. I don't have greater eyesight, but I've got the sight back in that right eye almost to exactly the level it was previous to the problem where I had the COVID. I don't know exactly why that is, except that the eyes are, you know, merely an extension of the brain kind of physiologically. I know some people disagree with that, and scientifically there's a difference in the development of these things, and I know. But it is interconnected, and it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just telling you my experience. I'm not saying this could restore anybody's eyesight. I'm just telling you that mine was brought back. So I got to rewind on a lot of the wear and tear stuff that, you know, physically, honestly. And my energy's better. Another thing is that I have an odd trigger reaction to pain. And I don't know if it's psychological or physiological or maybe a little column A, a little column B. But quite frankly, when I was younger, if something hurt me, I had a hard time not violently lashing out at it. I stubbed my toe, I would destroy a piece of furniture. You know, I get hurt because of something that fell off a wall, I'm punching a couple of holes in that wall. You know, this, and this sounds terrible, right? And it was just, but I'm telling you, it was like an automated response. I don't have a choice about this kind of thing.
It becomes a reflex.
Yeah, I mean, working with tools, I would occasionally jab myself with a screwdriver. I've snapped a screwdriver off the handle. I've destroyed the thing I was trying to assemble from wherever, you know. I've done stuff like this. I mean, I've thrown stuff out windows, down steps. And you know, when I was a teenager, if a person hurt me, they were going to get hurt. It wasn't a thought. It wasn't something I could control. It's just an automatic, but anyway, this is no longer an issue. I'm not saying I don't have that response, but it is, way easy. I have control. I don't have to lose it. I don't have to. And, you know, over decades, by the way, I developed a kind of like I would just kind of growl and stand and shake in order not to lash out violently, which anybody who's known me over the past 30 years will tell you that they probably at some point seen this if they've seen something cause me pain. But now, you know, yeah, I get a little angry, but I'm not like literally having to use every ounce of energy I have not to ball up my fist and go bashing at whatever it is, pretty much instantly. I mean, I've even turned around where, like, one of my kids has hit me with a toy, and I've turned around and backhanded him and knocked him across the room. Not something I do on a daily basis, but I've done that.
Right.
You know, and it was, there was no thought process. It was a reflex. Yeah. And even with that, that's the restrained version of the reflex. But now, as I'm trying to pack up the house, I banged myself into a few things. And it happened over the weeks. We have this weird corner on the bed in the bedroom, which occasionally I bang my shin on. And it's a piece of metal, and it sucks, and it usually makes me bleed. But anyway, yeah, I don't have this rage that I need to, like, you know, use every ounce of my strength not to lash. It's not there anymore. It just doesn't do that.
That's amazing.
So now I'm going into psychological stuff because we've gone through physical. But, I mean, do you have any questions about the physical stuff? Because I don't have a lot of answers except that I feel stronger. I feel... I am, you know, I mean, I'm not like, oh, wow, I'm like I'm 20, but a lot of years of feeling my body kind of failing has been rewound quite a bit. Didn't expect that at all. That wasn't even my goal. I wasn't looking for it. But somehow or other, a bunch of things that were going downhill, you know, started going uphill.
I think, yeah. I mean, you know, putting on my clinician hat, you know, I think a lot of it can be explained just because if you're, you know, you're healed. I mean, I'm a big mind-body advocate. You know, I think the mind and the body work together. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, putting it just simply. But I think we all can create or repair so many physical problems when we fix our minds.
Well, see, that's one of the things I thought might have been happening too. Because, okay, I'll give you a really typical. This is a very common example of what you're talking about. Is sometimes people have back pain, and mm-hmm. there's nothing really wrong with their back. They're
right.
just
absolutely
feeling as though they're carrying something around, and it's giving them a back ache. Not like real severe pain, but they've got this, you know, nagging sort of ache on their back. And mm-hmm. therapeutically, people clear themselves, you know, which psychotherapy is somewhat useful, but you got to be
if
very
you have the right psychotherapist, yes.
You know, but see, again, I am very cynical about this sort of stuff, but I would say it does depend on the psychotherapist. But either way, I've seen psychotherapy cure many backaches because mm-hmm. it's valid. If you don't feel good, if you're really unhappy, if you're miserable, you're going to feel it more in your body. It just happens. So mm-hmm. I allow for the idea that, you know, there is something to this that is purely psychological. 'Cause I can tell you the one thing that I cannot explain precisely, and not think that I'm sounding like I'm crazy as I speak. I feel larger.
That makes sense.
I am just larger.
You feel better.
Well, not only do I feel better, but I literally feel as though I am a larger thing than I was. I actually feel as though physically I am increased in size. You know, and again,
do you think it improved? Do you think it helped your posture any?
Yeah, I know it did a little. It did a little because mm-hmm. I was hunched over from the pain. You understand, mm-hmm. and that locking up, mm-hmm. and even with the cane, then you're leaning forward with the cane a little bit. So. Mm-hmm. I was literally probably a little shorter based on my posture, but I don't mean that I'm just a little taller. I mean that I actually feel as though I am larger. I know that sounds like, yeah, what does that mean? But in total, I feel larger. I don't, mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it even, but and I know that's purely a psychological thing, or it could be, you know, psycho-spiritual, but...
Yeah.
I'm larger.
I mean, it makes sense to me. I'm not sure that I could necessarily put it in the best words either. But it doesn't, you know, from my perspective, it doesn't sound like you're crazy. It almost sounds like.
But it's hard to relate It's hard to relate it to another person that there is a sense of your own size. I mean. Let me try and see if you can help me with this. You generally have a sense of your own size, right? Of course, we know, you know, numerical measurements. Okay, so I'm 6 foot tall. I weigh this much. All right, whatever. And, you know, and you're aware that you're a large frame person or a smaller frame person, or maybe you're fat, you're skinny, whatever. You have those senses. Those are aesthetics. The thing is, this is beyond that. This is a... nobody's ever explained this to me, and I've never seen a reference to this, but there is a sense of one's own size, you know, like from the inside, not just the flesh and bone, but all of it. And quite frankly, all of it feels larger. And I mean, it's inadequate. I have an inadequate description here, but I mean to tell you, I absolutely feel as though I'm larger. Than I was before this, and many times as I've done this, I am increasing in size. Not just during the time when I'm influenced, but I am larger in size afterwards. You know, and physically, look, you could probably weigh me. There wouldn't be a difference, you know, from one day to the next. Right. Or, but I don't care what that scale says. I don't care what the scale says. I don't care what anybody who's looking at me says.
I don't think this is a physical thing at all. I don't think it's a physical thing at all.
No, but the sensation feels like a physical sensation. It's very odd to me because it is both psychological and has a physical feeling to it. So back to the question about whether my posture increases, therefore, and back to the question of whether, you know, maybe some of the physical ailments feel less burdened, less of a burden on me. Maybe this is part of it also, but there is an indescribable element here which is not commonly spoken about. That I'm telling you, there is just a larger me right now. I don't know. Sorry. But go ahead. And I mean, anything you want to add in here or ask or represent, go ahead.
No, I mean, what it sounds like to me is, you know, you know, through these experiences, you've been able to confront and start to work on or repair things from your past. You know, not repair the past, but, you know, repair the damage and the scars that it left you with. And I think it's almost, you know, I think you're probably clearing out so much negative energy and, you know, so much, you know, just probably pent up things over the years. You know, they're out of your mind. You're freeing yourself from them. And, you know, I think that, you know, you look at someone who's, you know, clinically depressed, you can usually tell when you see them. And if they, you know, if someone recovers, you can usually tell too, by before you even talk to them. It's just, you know, it weighs you down physically. All the mental baggage, all the emotional or the spiritual things, you know, it does. It weighs you down physically. And I think when you start to clean that up, I think it makes perfect sense that you would feel physically better and, you know, physically stronger, physically more, you know, physically more, I don't want to say in shape because that's not the word I'm looking for, but, you know, it could be just a matter of energy.
Yeah. Well, and here's a funny thing about what you just said. In a way, you know, very right, it cleared out a lot of things. But it also piled in a whole bunch of stuff, which was, I don't want it to seem like, oh, I'm just, you know, free of everything. No, that didn't happen. A lot of things came in that I was not aware were even there, like all of a sudden. You know, and maybe that is a symptom of clearing things out, because, look, if you ever ended up with a room in your home that kind of becomes a catch-all storage space, you forget about the stuff you originally put in there because you only see what you see from the doorway. And maybe that's part of what happened. But I really felt like, yeah, a lot of that stuff got cleaned out. And a lot of stuff that I wasn't even aware of got put back in.
Well, yeah. I mean, because it didn't have any... You didn't have any room for it. Now you do.
Right. Right. But it's... Again, we're talking about a purely psychological experience, an emotional one. But I mean, it feels very much like that's what happened. Both things occurred that, I was able to, and that's the most interesting part of this to me, because now we're going to have to move into the goal that I actually originally had. And, you know, and the fact is that, yeah, I got all these physical results and I'm not stating that scientifically there is or is not a valid conclusion for physical change, because, again, as people are learning and they discover these new things, I mean, neuropathology is still something that is, you know, contains a whole lot of unknowns and readjustments constantly as a science. One of the things that they have discovered is that, you know, literally, if your brain is being pushed in a certain direction, it changes the operation of the brain. And, you know, and like the example where a lot of children that are ignored as babies stop looking for interaction. They you know, simply, like, that part of their brain literally stops working. Mm-hmm. And so there is a physical response to the psychological and emotional input that can manifest itself physically. So both things are true and at the same time not necessarily true when it comes to, did this do anything to me physically or not? Because in my mind, if even there was new responses, new interfaces, and an altered state, which there definitely was altered states here, then that allows for the possibility of running electrical current through circuits that maybe had not been active. And
very possible.
You know, just like when you heat up your heating element that hasn't been used for a while and it's got to burn off some dust, you know, in a way, that might happen in my brain. And all of this might be explainable in a physiological sense, but maybe not. I'm not mm-hmm. asserting either way. I'm saying don't close, you know, I think people should not close their minds to either idea that there is a physical mm-hmm. reaction and a psychological reaction. Even if you wanted to go in a purely scientific way and you don't even want to examine the spiritual, which, by the way, I would say there is a spiritual element to that, but I don't even want to go there because, to me, that's a personal experience. I think that somebody else who has a different set of spiritual values would probably experience this in an entirely different way.
Probably.
So, you know, but again, it's got to do with your psychology. So going in, I had the idea that, you know, frankly, I just wanted to get the PTSD to stop doing to me what it was doing. And
right.
frankly, I was deeply depressed, and I felt like I was slipping. Like, you know, much like I described my physical being reduced over time and going downhill, you know, I've taken a lot of beatings in my life, but for the first time, I felt like I was just fading emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, and physically all at the same time. Like, this is it. If all those things are dwindling away, then the flame of my life is about to go out. And I'm not afraid of death. Death is fine. As a matter of fact, I welcome it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not looking to, you know, bring it prematurely. But I'm looking forward to where I go next. And I do believe that I will go somewhere else. And I'm fine with it. And I'll tell you the truth. If anybody feels sad for me the day I die, you don't know me. Because I'm not going to be sad when I take my last breath. But the sensation of slipping into death slowly and in an agonizing way, I'd rather just take a bullet. I really would. I'd rather just be done than do that. So that is the thing that I was dealing with on a daily basis, and it was just this slow crawl to eventually I'm going to have nothing. No energy, no strength, no thought, no life, because everything is slowly but surely draining away. And not comfortably, not quietly, not internally anyway. Hurt on a lot of levels. I don't expect life not to be painful. Matter of fact, I would question whether I was alive if I didn't feel any pain. Because I would think I must have died, not been aware of it, and I'm in a fantasy here. Because I don't know what life is without pain. Physical, emotional, doesn't matter. If there is no pain, there is no life. That is an internal statement. It's just who I am. Okay, but this was really terrible to me. To fade. So that not only stopped, but I felt an uplift. I feel as though,
a little bit of like a renewed a renewed sense of purpose, just a renewed sense of...
It's just sense of being. It's not even about purpose or anything. It's, you know what, I'm here. I'm still here. Mm-hmm. I'm not fading away. Which, again, I'm not saying that that's actually the happiest thing. Many a day, I'm, you know, not only surprised but disappointed that I'm still alive, honestly.
Even after this?
Well, see, that's the thing. After this, it's not that intense, you know. That's what I was leading into, actually, is that on a daily basis when I was fading like that, every day, here's the way my mind kicks into I'm conscious. First of all, I'm in pain. That's my first sensation every day. It still is, but it's not brutal. As many days it was brutal. It was just, not only am I in pain, but I'll just share my internal voice. You know, I'm still here. I really don't even want to be here, but I'm still here. Those are my first two thoughts. Anytime that, you know, I realize I'm coming out of unconsciousness back to this conscious platform. And that's the way I've been most of my life. But over the past 6-7 years, it started to get to me. It really started to be like that every single day. And I didn't share that with anybody. Because I just figured, no, my misery comes in, you know, waves, and I'll go back to my low-grade misery at some point. And, you know, it won't, but it did not let go over the past several years. And so, honest result, I don't wake up like that every day. I don't wake up like that. And the other way I would wake up occasionally was, for lack of a better term, battle mode. What's mm-hmm. wrong? What do I have to confront? What's going on? Yeah. Immediate. Stand. You got to deal with what's around you. There is something going on. You need to be aware.
Yeah,
that's my
PTSD.
Other inner voice. And then after I did that, stood up and evaluated the circumstance, then it's, damn it, I'm still here. And I'm in pain, you know, and maybe it would be in a different order if I was startled up to, you know, what's wrong, what's going on.
Right.
But those are my only two modes. And realize I would do this if I tried to sleep over the course of a night, 5-6 times. I got to wake up with this. And damn it, I'm still here. Oh, there was a dream of some kind, but pain. It's just, that's it. That's my opening thoughts, you know, every time my eyes could open. It's not like that. And I'll tell you, it's really not like that, because last night, which is strange, and I've had, you know, I've had periods now of, you know, a little bit of sleep disturbance. Not every night do I get 6-7 hours sleep. And some people that that have contact with me on Skype know this, because they're like, how are you? Why are you awake at 4 o'clock in the morning and 11 p.m. and, you know, yeah, okay. True. And I don't answer. I've got Skype open all the time on my one computer. And honestly, sometimes I just purposely don't look at it, because I'd be responding to people 24 hours a day almost.
Right.
But thing is that last night I had a bit of a rough sleep. And nightmares too. Usually I don't think I remember a long stretch without nightmares, except I don't know, maybe a few months here or there, since I'm 4 years old. So 45 years, nightmares are normal. And sleep disturbance is normal, but it was really, really bad for the past many years, and it's just like, am I older? Is it because I have to pee sometimes? I mean, I get up and I have to use the bathroom, but, you know, I don't think that's what got me up. And by the way, most of these times I get up, I don't have to use the bathroom, so it's not like, oh, you have a prostate issue. No. It's just this constant disturbance that comes from within. So as I said, last night I had a rough time sleeping, but it wasn't due to nightmares. It wasn't due to that startle, get up and get ready to fight. I mean, that's right. Happened a couple of times over the past now 4 months, I think. A couple of times. But,
well, if you've gone from multiple times a night to a few times in a couple of months, I'd say that is a huge...
Oh, it's a hell of an improvement. And the other thing is, I've had a couple of weird, kind of disturbing dreams, but the steady flow of nightmare recall, it isn't there. I'm not waking up sweating all the time. I'm not doing any of that. I still snore, which might be part of the reason why I wake up or whatever, but I had the sleep apnea surgery years ago. What I'm saying is, though, is that all these psychological elements that kept me in a tortured state, due to probably sleep deprivation is a key. But sleep deprivation, depression, constantly having fight and flight reactions to, I mean, sounds, just sounds. Even the weenie dog barking would really rattle me sometimes. I'm not as rattled by sudden noises. I almost think I'm having a reasonable response. Most of the time, occasionally I get a little startled. You know, something drops on the floor, and I'm a little freaked out.
Oh, that's normal.
Yeah, but see, I don't know, because I'm really accustomed to even if I don't show it, a very extreme internal reaction, a hyper response. So I'm trying to get accustomed to what might be normal.
It sounds like it.
But I'm just saying, I'm actually a little confused by this. You know,
I think you got more than you bargained for, but I think in a good way.
Yeah, like, okay. Another contrast description, and I'm trying to give you all these contrasts because I'm hoping that you're building some questions for the next hour. But a big contrast, right? I'll tell you about my psychology. No matter where I've lived, no matter where I've spent my time, part of my mind is usually occupied with listening to what's going on outside of the walls. And trying to be aware of anything that's coming that's a problem. I'm usually the guy without looking out the window. I'm aware of when the neighbors are coming and going from their houses, when a car's going by, when, you know, a truck stops, a little bit down the road. All these things I'm usually paying attention to 24 hours a day.
You're in constant fight or flight mode.
I was. That is, I'm not saying I don't do it, but it is not an intense priority, which it was like an obsessive priority.
It's a survival mechanism.
Well, yeah, see, now, it's a survival mechanism if you're in the middle of hell, if you're in combat.
Right,
if you're in a constantly violent situation, then it's a survival mechanism. Here's the problem, though. I mean, what is somebody going to keep me in a violent situation the rest of my life so this is normal? I mean, I don't know how to describe that any better, but what I just said is that, yeah, in a violent or extreme circumstance, I can adjust that, no problem.
Yeah.
I can deal with that. I can deal with... You know, it's way less disturbing to me. You know, as I've said on the show before, which probably somebody's going to look back at some of the things I've said if they hear this and say, yeah, okay, now certain things make sense. I mean, I'm dead serious. You know, if a neighbor points a gun at me, I'm much less threatened than when they call the cops.
I believe that.
You know, stuff like that. I really, that is a, I'm not making a political statement. I'm telling you my reality.
You might be able to reason with your neighbor.
Right. That's how I see it. And there's a lot of weird things like that where, you know, being around people that are walking too close to the edge of a sidewalk. I mean, all kinds of weird things that I have that, you know, it would take me probably two more shows to explain.
I think a lot of it is probably that you ended up needing these skills at such a young age that, I mean, it became a normal mode of operation for you that I think, you know, because you were so young that I think you're going to carry a lot of that. I think that just you were just, that's how you were trained. And it's how life trained you.
Right.
You know, some of that is, I don't think some of that was ever going to go away. Because it's not always a bad thing to have that sort of situational awareness. But yeah, I think because it was thrust on you at such a young age and you absolutely had to do it to survive, that it's almost a normal operating mode for you.
Well, you know what it is? It's a sense of safety, which only I can grant to myself.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's all gone. What I'm saying is that it makes other parts of life a little unmanageable. If you're,
I can imagine that,
constantly prepared for battle.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I'm you wouldn't believe this from listening to the show, but emotionally I'm a little flat sometimes. I'm very controlled, very middle of the road emotionally. Mm-hmm. No matter the circumstance. And that means, you know, terrible things happen, I'm the calm guy. Happy things happen, guess what? I'm the calm guy. Okay? I am constantly measured and controlled. Internally, now, I don't even reasonably know how to express it, honestly. Internally, though, I'm feeling stuff that is unfamiliar to me. A lot of things. And so it's a little confusing. I'm doing a lot of emotion.
Do you want to go into any of those?
Well, it's there's a lot going on there, and I'm sighing because it's like, yeah, okay, I got a couple things to throw in there that are different. My entire emotional and psychological interaction with sexuality sort of went a bit dead along with everything else, in my opinion.
That makes sense.
Not as though I didn't want it, but it has changed in a way that I don't know how to describe in my own head. I am now recalling certain emotional responses from earlier in my life. And things like this where, you know, I'm still sorting that out. You know, I mean, I have never deviated from being heterosexual in my ideals, but you know, and in my behaviors that were voluntary. But it's still, it's a bit odd. It's like a certain weirdness woke up in there.
Okay.
And I don't, and I'm not exactly sure. I like that requires a dissection or a vivisection, really. All of its own. But it's not just that. You know, outside of that, this is going to sound really stupid, but really to feel as though I have a sense of happiness for any more than a quick flash is not something I'm accustomed to, and I'm not necessarily happy thrilled. I'm not one of those guys still, but I find myself being pleased with things, whereas I was very much numb.
That's an improvement.
And so it's mild, and I'm sure it's still not really discernible to people outside of my head. But, I am actually pleased. Whereas, generally speaking, in a lot of cases, I throughout my life, I've had these arguments with friends. Every woman that was with me for, you know, a little bit, my odd emotional reactions to things, you know, like I've heard throughout time now, you never seem happy. Nothing makes you happy. You don't react like a normal person. You don't show emotion. No positive emotion. And it's not like I walk around angry. It's just that I'm very level and controlled in my outward expressions. It doesn't mean that I'm not affectionate, but I'm not a highly affectionate person either. You know, except in very private and intense circumstances. Outside of you know, but I will casually, like, you know, before COVID anyway, casually, you know, touch somebody on the shoulder when I'm talking to them and things like that, and express myself with my hands. So physical expression is not impossible, but most people don't find me to be a warm person at all because of this very sort of controlled output that I have. But I don't even know if I'm putting it out, because honestly, smiling is rather alien to me. You know, I laugh at stuff. I find things funny. I have a sense of humor. But, you know, I've even heard over the course of my life that I don't have very much of a sense of humor, but I think I have a very good sense of humor. You know, but I'm a very, like, I'm a little more energetic when I get in front of this microphone than I am, you know, commonly. I push my energy up. I'm not putting on an act. This is who I am. You know, anybody who's talked to me when I'm not doing this show knows that it is the same guy. You know, but he's a little more awake when he's doing the show. But I'm actually feeling like the energy that I've usually gotta, you know, consciously push when I'm doing the show. Like, I feel a lot more awake. I feel a lot more, I don't know, there's been such a transition here, and there's so many different things, it's hard to say exactly. Like, you sort of have to understand where I came from to get why this is even a big deal. Like, I'm like, oh, I smiled, you know, yeah, so what? No, I didn't do that without having to think about it, and should I show a smile? And no, I'll actually, like, maybe express myself a little bit now, which I didn't before. I'm just more complete. So I know I'm over the hour, so I'm going to take a break. And, you know, I know I ran my mouth a lot. I'd love it if you had any more questions or anything that you'd like to explore or curiosities about this. I mean, I lay it all open. It's fine.
You're doing a great job without me prompting. So that's why I'm just prompting where I see an opening.
Okay.
Well, no, you're doing a great job.
Okay, so we'll take a little break. And when we come back, I really hope that you've got a few questions anyway. I don't think I've answered everything that could be asked about this, but, you know, the idea that I'm getting larger, and I know that sounds, that, I don't know, does that sound really crazy? I'm not sure, but you guys will have to judge
really
for
does.
Yourselves, yeah. Okay, yeah, well.
To me it doesn't. I can't say what other people, you know, how other people are interpreting it, but. You know, well, you know, maybe, you know, having sort of followed you through this whole thing, it just makes sense.
Well, I guess we'll find out if any more of it makes sense on the other side. And maybe we'll drag Mrs. O into this for the last half hour or so. Meanwhile, the psilocybin special, and this is the experiment part three. And my series on it continues with my good friend Captain Trips. Stick around. You might want to catch the end.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
In denial. Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all powerful people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
The second hour of the Ocelli Effect special on psilocybin begins now. Instead of doing what I said initially, which was bring in Mrs. O for the last half hour, I brought her in for the last, nearly an hour, in order to provide some observations that I think are key here. And Captain Trips is along with us, and I'm hoping that he's got some more questions before we're done, because it is, I feel as though it's impossible, really, to describe some of the results that have come from this experiment, which has been, in my estimation, highly therapeutic for me. I do not know if these results can be duplicated with others, but it does seem likely since that's how I got inspired to try it. And I wound up with, as Captain Tripp said in the first hour, a lot more than I bargained for, but in a good way. So anyway, I figure we'll get right to Mrs. O, because you know what? No matter what I'm explaining about my emotional reactions and how I feel and all this other stuff, maybe she's observing something different than what I'm saying, or she has something to add here. Have you been listening to this whole thing?
I have.
Okay. So, I don't know if there's things that I missed or stuff that you could add that, look, obviously, I don't stare in mirrors. It's not my pastime. I'm not always trying to do self-examination. I know these shows on psilocybin sound like I'm quite occupied with self-examination, but I'm not. So I probably am not observing everything that's happening. So, you know, positive, negative, whatever, your voice, your point of view, what do you see as different or the same or whatever it is you want to say about this?
Well, to touch on a couple things that you and Captain talked about in the first hour, let me just start by saying I didn't know that you were suffering as badly as you were. I'm a little embarrassed to say that I didn't know. You were very good at keeping it all to yourself. So I just wanted to put that out there, that I wasn't aware of how bad you felt. I didn't know.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be embarrassed by that, because...
Yeah, don't.
You should not be. And the reason is, I don't think I know a time when I could freely express whether it's anything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to who. I am very much the kind of guy who's of the mentality of, you know what, you suck it up, you deal with it. And...
Well, I know. But
you know,
I still sort of had an inkling, but, I mean, it's not about me, so I just wanted to say that whoever is listening, that I didn't know. So, it's not like I wasn't willing to help you. I didn't know. So that's out of the way.
Well, one other key thing there, though, is you and I have had that conversation where you've said, look, I didn't know that you were in that kind of shape. I, even if I had a desire to share it, which I did not, I don't want to place my pain on anybody else anyway, especially not somebody I care about. So I wouldn't do that in the first place. But the other problem here is that, quite frankly, since I've never done it, I don't know how to tell somebody else that.
Right.
Like, I really, it sounds probably silly, but if you've never told anybody what you're going through and you've been accustomed to, you know what, I'm just going to eat this, then you do that. You don't know how to express that. You don't know, you know, what do you say? I don't feel good. Okay. What does that mean? You know, I feel like I'm dying. Okay, do you need to go to the hospital? No, not a hospital ain't gonna help me today. You know, I don't even know how to explain this. to somebody, really. Never really did. And quite frankly, I feel like I'm falling short still explaining where I was at, what was going on.
I think you did pretty good with the wet blanket analogy, where, you know, you feel like you're suffocating. I've heard a lot of people who maybe not experience the same thing that you experiences that you have, but they feel as though they're just drowning, and then there's something else on top of them, and they're pushing them down further, and they can't breathe, and not literally can't breathe, but can't breathe, and something so heavy is on top of them, they just can't move, can't function, they can't think clearly.
Well, the sensation of drowning, if you just, you know, played it in very super slow motion and you made it go on all day, sure. That's kind of what that's like. Oh, okay, so I'm sorry I interrupted, but go ahead. You were saying that, you know, you weren't aware. But I want to make it clear that it's not your fault. And you know what? If somebody else is hearing this and saying, you know, well, gee, I'm not aware, or maybe, you know, awareness is not, it's not always something that, not everybody shares their pain. I'll be honest with you.
No.
So, anyway, it's not your fault. Go on.
And then my other point, and this is for everybody other, you know, along with you, that the people that you were with before me, they experienced how you are with affection and emotion and all that. And my feeling on that and has always been that if you know this about the person when you're getting to know them, then it's your fault for expecting more from them than they're not capable of giving. Like, I know that you love me, and I know that you love me in the way you know how to love me, and that I'm okay with that. So if anybody else is, you know, experiencing something similar where they're not emotional enough or they're not affectionate enough or whatever, that the person that they're with knew this going into it. So to go into a relationship trying to change that other person, I think is very unfair, because you already knew this. So I just wanted to put that out there too. Okay, so with that being said, the changes that I've seen, well, you don't walk with a cane anymore. I'm the one now with the hip problem. You don't need the cane. I need to use your cane. There was a time, he's got a broken little piggy toe, and we have the bed that we have, the thing sticks out, frame sticks out a little too much. And there were times that he would hit his pinky toe, and I'd leave the room. Not because I was afraid he's going to hurt me or anything like that, but I knew what was coming. So I would walk out, close the door. That doesn't happen anymore. The look on the face is still there, but the outward initial anger, where if he feels pain, he gets angry. He doesn't show that he's hurt. He shows anger. Not so much anymore. That's seems to have subsided. I do notice a little smile here and there with things like when our son, you know, he's 7, does something silly or says something silly, there's more of an emotional reaction. I do agree 100% with the explanation of feeling larger. To me, it's like the presence is larger. He's not, didn't physically get taller,
but
the presence itself is larger. It's actually where it was when I first met Chuck. In the sense that he was like larger than life to me when I first met him, and then I did see that diminish a little bit, and I don't know when exactly, but that's the presence of just being larger than life is there again. Let's see, what else?
Well,
does definitely have a clearer thinking. Not that you weren't clear before, but it's improved. It's better now. Your focus is better, I would say.
You know, that downward slide, this is not causation, but honestly, I would say, you know, you and I have been together about 8 years, and people meet us, they always think it's been longer. But
yeah, I would too.
Most people interpret us as being together much longer. But you know, we're very cooperative with one another, to the point where it's like it's a very smooth thing. But it's not causation. You know, you didn't cause this, but quite frankly, around the time that Frankie was born, I think is when this slide really started to take hold and never changed direction. Mm-hmm. And I it's not because of him either. It's
no,
just
not at all.
It's coincidence that this occurred, but it's not like she's been dragging me down or anything. But over the course of our relationship, I've diminished, but it's probably been very slow. And again, because of my very controlled sort of general state of being, I think that's another reason why you didn't realize that I had slid probably as far as I had. Because I maintain a pretty, you know, again, even keel most of the time, no matter what's going on. And, you know, doesn't matter if there's fire or, you know, fire, gunshots, or, you know, nothing happening at all, you might see the very same sort of behaviors out of me.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to measure. Anyway, what other changes, you know, would you note any other changes, you think? I mean, you feel as though I've kind of gotten that larger thing, and I think Ray was correct, and also Phase Shifter was correct in the chat room. And there's even more to it. I think I am standing up a little straighter physically, too, than I used to. And that may be, again, partially body mechanics and partially psychological. What do you think of that?
I think that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
I don't really have much to add to that part.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm trying to think now. Going through the day.
Well,
you've always been very calm, but there's a different feeling of calm that you're presenting with now. I mean, they're all very good improvements, everything. And, you know, I'd really like to see if they can do this type of treatment, if, you know, they would volunteer or you know, agree to do it to people in either some sort of psych ward or perhaps prisons that are suffering also, and see
There's
if it helps them. But that may never come to fruition.
I think they have been using it, you know, all experimental use, of course, in psychiatric patients. I'm not sure exactly which, you know, which disorders are treating with it. I know PTSD seems to be the one that is most positively affected by it. But that's interesting that you mentioned the people in prison. Of course, I mean the our system has no interest in making them any better.
No,
well, no, yeah. You know, of course not. But I think it's a lot better of treatment for even if it were to treat people with depression, because I think that you know maybe part of what Chuck was experiencing was some form of depression.
I'm sure it was thrown in there. Absolutely.
So I think it's a lot better than electroshock treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a natural substance, mm-hmm. and I think they don't want to do it because they're afraid of it. Mm. You know, because oh no, you know, people start buying magic mushrooms and they'll have no need for, you know, the
it's all,
big
all
pharma.
Economic.
Mm.
And that's a shame that people are not going to get the help that they need because of politics. When it's a simple, I'll say this about marijuana. I say it about opioids. It's all, you know, natural things that grow, that our planet provides us to be well, and we're not allowed to use it because somebody says so, you know. It's silly.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing about this is that, you know, and I've used cannabis. to try and treat these problems. And it does indeed give me a rest and allow me to relax temporarily. But this has actually provided me with an ability outside of, I mean, I'm just going to speak bluntly. Even when I'm not high, I'm relaxed. I've actually been able to relax. And I know that sounds like, yes, yeah, so what? But honestly, I couldn't relax before. There was no, even when I tried to relax, there was no real relaxation. Mm-hmm. I can actually.
Your mind never slows down.
It never did. And, you know, I used to think that that was a very good thing, and circumstances when I was younger, it was a very good thing. Thinking on multiple levels, on multiple tracks at all times, being alert and, you know, situational awareness combined with, you know, theoretical equations, trying to determine game things out, determine people's reactions, determine positioning, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I've already, you know, on a daily basis, I make a lot of calculations to compensate for my lack of eyesight. Mm-hmm. But it was like my whole brain was doing that about everything, trying to keep me from walking into walls or into the wrong spot. Always. And I'm not saying that I can't do that. I can still do it. But I have an off switch now. And it doesn't completely turn off, but it's more like a dimmer. And I can turn that down. And it is such a relief to not have to be constantly on alert. And I know, you know, again, if you don't experience this yourself, it might be hard for somebody to understand that. Yeah, you can literally be constantly on alert. And it becomes exhausting. But it doesn't mean, you know, despite your exhaustion, you go past tired, you go past overtired. And I wonder
a lot of your improvements, maybe even more the physical ones, could be, you know, due in large part to the fact that you were so fatigued by everything you were going through. You know what you're describing, it sounds like you were, you know, you couldn't were never getting good sleep, but then when you were awake, it sounds like everything was just wearing you out.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being improved, your sleep's improved, your energy levels are going to be better, and you couple that with the mental clarity and, you know, working on some of the stuff from the past, and I think it's pretty easy to explain how your physical self has improved too.
Mm. Now the funny thing is that the Ford Freak brings up meditation in the chat room. I know how to meditate. I've instructed many people how to, as well. And meditation is something that I was able to do. And quite frankly, a weird thing is that I could get into a meditative state that is very similar to the psilocybin experience.
Interesting. And you could do that before?
I could do that before.
Mm.
The problem was that I couldn't detach myself during that experience from myself. I could get into a meditative state which would allow, you know, but it took a long time for me. I could show people how to do stuff so that in, you know, 30 minutes they reset, refreshed, recharged, no problem. I can show you how. You know, I've never tried to do it, like, you know, say online or over Skype or whatever, but when I've got somebody physically in front of me, I can instruct them and show them and everything from the basic relaxation and breathing techniques to far beyond that, where you can visualize, and, you know, this gets into a bit of a spiritual area, but it is very doable to step outside of your physical body. I'm not saying I'm one of these guys who talks about, you know, well, I will astral project into. No. I'm not one of these guys, but I am telling you that you can, with the proper, you know, the proper meditative state, step outside of your body and use things that are not your eyes to see around you. And that's a very personal experience, and everybody goes through that a little different. But there are some tried and true things, and I've instructed many people how to do this, how to calm themselves, especially during, you know, tough times emotionally and things like that. The one thing that is great is to center yourself. You know, I'm one of these very much first thing in life, breathe, you know, and concentrate on your breathing and use the imagery in your mind. Let your eyes go for a little while and now create the image in your mind of what's happening as you're breathing. These types of techniques, and I don't even know where I learned them, honestly, but it's just something that I've always had. And I do that. So meditation is a solid thing. It's helpful. I've done it. I've had people talk to me about sensory deprivation. And it's like, yeah, I don't need to go into a tank to do that, actually. I can kind of turn off a lot of that. The one thing that I could never turn off, though, is my physical pain. I can turn off my sight. I can turn off my skin. You know, I can turn off my taste. I can turn off my smell. I can really turn off my ears. I can do all that. But I could never stop the physical pain. And still, when I've attempted to meditate without the psilocybin, I can't detach from that pain. It's the one thing that holds me back.
Interesting.
And for decades, like I said, I've had more effective results showing other people how to do it than even for myself. And they get away and they forget they're in pain. I can't. I don't know why that is. I have not been able to do it.
But it's better now since the psilocybin.
Well, but that's the thing, is that overall, I'm not like, I'm not being beaten over the head by anything anymore.
Right.
I have some ownership over what it is that I get to feel. No, I still have chronic pain. It's not gone. It's a daily thing still, but it's not horribly just sapping me. As it was. It's still there. I've got pain in my lower back. I've got pain in my neck, but I don't have my lower back locking up as much. I mean, I'm still not, you know, physically powerful as I once was.
Well, no.
You know, there was a time when, regardless of what you thought looking at me, I was much stronger than whatever you thought. The kind of guy who doesn't look like he's in shape, but then you need to move 500 pounds of dead weight, I can do it. Right. You know, with a little effort, not a lot, but, you know, again, I've never gotten back to that level I was at before I was injured pretty badly. But I'm not weak, crippled, and fading as I was. So, you know, moving all these boxes and everything is still going to be tough there, hon. But but we can get it done. I can do some things. And I feel stronger overall, stronger, larger, clearer. I don't know what else to describe here. I mean, am I missing anything? Is there something that you're thinking of, hon, that is, you know, also observable outside of, you know, you can actually see some emotional responses you didn't see before. The rage response is definitely lowered, you know, for pain. Whatever, I mean, what else do you see? Anything that you think you should add here?
Well, the only thing that I'd love to be able to research a little bit more is, like, how long after you've come down from the treatment does it continue to work? Like, I believe that it's connecting... You know, is it still working to connect the neurons that have been injured or have died? Because I know a couple of times when you were, it was probably about the like in the second or third hour, because it usually lasts about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere between the second and third hour, a couple times he said he felt like he could feel like it doing something in his brain.
Right.
So, you know, I'm curious, how long does it continue to do that? You know, a few days after you've come down from the actual effect,
where I think it's working, and I'd have to pull some literature to confirm this, so I don't quote me 100%, but I think it's actually, you know, it's working at the level of the neurotransmitters. So if it's either you know, physically repairing some of the receptor sites or something, then I don't know if it would have to continue. You know what I mean? If it's actually fixing what's broken, so to speak, and improving some of those connections, then, you know, I don't know if it's something that would continue, because that might be all that was needed, if that makes any sense.
Well, and see, the weird thing about
started it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like it started it, and now that it's been started, it just keeps going. Like, I'm wondering if that happens, or each time he does another treatment, does it go back to where, you know, and then continue with, like, another, I don't know, you know what I mean, like another
section. Well, do you notice, Chuck, you could answer this question. In the periods between when you've done the treatments, do you feel yourself slipping at all, and that's why you feel you need another treatment, or are you just ready to do another treatment, not that you to continue the improvement, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, generally I would say I'm trying to continue the improvement, but here's the weird thing, is I have a sense, and I don't know if this is just, okay, now you're given a new something, work with it, and I wasn't accustomed to having it, so therefore it just comes up in the course of, daily life, that I now have access to do something with my brain that wasn't there before.
That's possible.
I don't know if it's new access or if there's continuous improvements afterwards. I've seen a couple of different opinions on that. I can tell you what I feel, but I don't know for certain if it's me feeling, you know, just the new ability, or if it's me actually continuing to heal afterwards. But it does feel like...
It could be both.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It feels like both.
It certainly could be.
You know, and some of it, again, is not all sunshine and roses. Because...
Of course not.
Because I'm having to reassemble some things psychologically that don't necessarily make sense. You know,
No, I was going to say, I'm sure that, you know, you're probably finding yourself in a position that, you know, because you had so many things that you couldn't, that you were dealing with from the past, that until they were dealt with, it's almost like you probably have a backlog of things you have to now deal with, because you're mentally now able to deal with things for so long you weren't. So now that blockage is gone, you're probably having, and certainly correct me if you don't think so, but I'm sure there's, you know, lots of things now that have just gone unattended by you, that you now have the...
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Are you still there? Did you go away? Oh, we might have lost Captain Trips, but... let's see. Not sure what happened there. Maybe he hit the mute button. No, but you see, that is also true, is that... But there is this odd sense of more than one thing kind of stuck in my head, where I have to confront the idea that, you know what, when I chose to learn about anatomy, there was positive purpose behind that, And there was also the practical, you know, if you're going to cut somebody, you might only get one chance, and you might want to know how and where to cut them to get your best result. You don't want to necessarily kill everybody, but once in a while, you might want to know how to flatten a lung. And on the other hand, I've been willing to stitch people up, and I've been willing to heal people, and I've been willing to repair damage. And both of these things are significant pieces of growth that have gone on, but they don't necessarily make sense in the same head, so to speak. So anyway. All right, so it looks like maybe Captain Tripp's lost connection. Ms. Zo, though, you're still there, right?
I'm still here.
Okay, good. We'll try and see if we can pull Captain Tripp's back in to conclude all this, right. But there are conflicting things that are present in me. And some of it, he's right about the past incidences that I was still dealing with or maybe had been left unattended. You know, and some of that I'm sorting through, doing most of that, you know, as per usual, just within my own head, trying to sort things out that again, are conflicting. You didn't hear the explanation, but I had said that I had to learn about anatomy for different purposes, right? And I went into a sophisticated study of anatomy as a child for, you know, conflicting reasons. On the one hand, I wanted to be able to heal people. On the other hand, it was useful to me to know exactly where to drive a piece of steel into somebody to flatten their lung. Which is an effective way to not necessarily kill somebody, but to cause the right amount of damage. So, Captain Tripp's connection is a little rough.
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are.
What happened?
There you are. Well, anyway, I'm just saying that there are conflicting things. Hopefully, your connection will settle down. There are conflicting things in my head that I'm sorting out, conflicting events, and you are correct in that there was unresolved issues that had been put aside, you know, that's probably why I mentioned sexuality to begin with, because that was one of the very, very, very broken roads, although it's probably one of the more healthy aspects of my personality that developed. It's a broken road. It's really a broken road. Mm-hmm. There's not a proper developmental through line.
Right.
You know, like, for instance, I kind of explained to Mrs. O, which is a weird conversation to have with her, but that the idea that there could be an affectionate relationship that was intimate, I developed it backwards. I kind of learned about it through my romantic interfaces as opposed to the baseline before that. And that causes me to have, you know, a bit of a backwards view of certain things. You know, but still I think I'm fairly healthy and reasonably, you know, normal. I'm not like Mr. Freaky Freak. You know, nothing too unusual, but to actually confront the full broken road of development in my own head on it causes some shifts in attitudes and maybe makes me look back at certain things and say, you know, yeesh, you know, I don't know. Behavior might have been based on some misconceptions here and there. You know, but there's a lot of events where I'm saying to myself, you know, given the circumstances, yeah, it's reasonable I might have done unreasonable things.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of conflicts with violence where, you know, if I had been left undisturbed from my early development and been given a healthy experience with other people, I would have selected not to participate in violent activity.
Sure.
And, you know, and simultaneously, the conflict is, it can easily be developed into a second or first nature for me. So there's a conflict there. I'm generally a peaceful person. I don't want to harm people. I don't want to harm myself. I don't want to harm anything or anyone, if left only to my own devices. But given the right circumstance, for some reason, I can adopt things that are in conflict to my core. And that's actually a little hard for me to swallow, stuff like that. There are more intense personal things that I'll keep to myself here about this, but but the fact is that I also recognize that all of it in the end is a part of who I am. It's not a disconnection in full,
right?
And it's an odd thing to have to sort of sort through. So I got to say, there's still a sorting process going on too.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
You know, but I do. I gotta say, you know, if somebody said, "Well, what's the number one thing?" You know, the funniest part is that it's that thing that I'm having a hard time describing. Where, frankly, I'm larger. I am larger, and I'm more myself. Then I have, I don't know at what point in my life I was more myself than I am right now, internally. And I don't even necessarily know how to express it all externally. I'm telling you, right, there's a lot going on that I don't know how to let out.
Hey. And you know what? It just might take some time.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be... Go ahead.
Well, this is going to be some adjustment. And, you know, before we get to the end of this, which is only, you know, a short ways away, one of the interesting things you posed during the break has also changed a bit. I mean, look, if I'm having all these sorts of shuffles inside of myself, right, the world around me starts to look different.
yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I am more intensely convinced about some of the negativity I see in the world than I used to be. You know,
me too.
The world is a hostile and stupid and irrational place, and you know why it is? Because there's people in it. And I love them all, but I don't like that many of them. I gotta tell you, it's a strange thing. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm like more convinced about, I don't know, a great majority of the things that I've been speaking about over the past many years. Because think about this, I've been on this decline the whole time I've been doing this show. So 2,000 episodes, you're hearing me slowly slip down a drain, and. You know, a negativity that you hear, or me getting aggravated or angry at the world around me on occasion. you know, quite frankly, I was withholding a lot of it. And I still am. There is, I mean, if I go full on just into what I, how disgusted I am at these creatures that I think are capable of so much more, and I do mean, you know, the people that are shaped sort of like me all over the planet.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I definitely couldn't maintain my my non-cursing kind of position. I certainly would be yelling a lot more and probably having way less people on, because I would just yell at everybody for 2 hours. Very frustrated with that. And, you know, and here's the thing, though, is that I don't think my optimism got any... My optimism comes and goes with this anyway. So I don't know if I'm more or less optimistic. I really can't tell. 'Cause, you know, that's the funny thing. I know I feel better. Is the world any better, or now am I subject to more of the crap that's going on here, because now I'm going to see it more clearly? I'm not sure if I'm happy with that part of it. Okay.
It's not looking pretty, let me tell you.
No, it's not. And I still have days, by the way, where, you know, my pain is rather intense. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is a constant happy trail. You know what I mean? I'm not constantly mm-hmm. happy. I mean, I'm just saying it's not all sunshine and all that all the way around. But, man, right. It is a hell of a lot more tolerable. You know, like in general, just within me. Now, you know, as far as the rest of the planet goes and my points of view, I mean, I do feel a little, I don't know, I feel as though I still have not done enough. I still don't have a super high opinion of who I am, who I've been, or anything like that. I mean, I'm not raised up to a point of, you know, just feeling, I don't know, a real super ego structure like a lot of people do. I don't have that still, but nevertheless, I'm much larger than I was. And, you know, and I'm at least owning who I am a lot more than being owned by something that feels like it's wrapped around me as opposed to coming from me. So I leave it like that. I mean, I don't know if you have any other questions or ideas that you want to throw in here, or Mrs. O, as I've been speaking, if you got something that you want to add, but, I give you guys, you know, the final words here on this, and I am once again just want to say before we do that, that I am extremely grateful because the individuals who made sure that I had this to work with, you guys really saved my life and made it so that I don't hate the fact that my eyes open every day, which I was starting to. You know what? I wasn't starting to. I was well into it. So I will be eternally thankful to those that put it in my hands, didn't ask me for money, just wanted to see me get better. I am getting better, and I think I can do some more. I think I can get even better. And at some point, I think I won't even need this because I'll be okay. So anyway.
I think so. I mean, you've had nothing but success. You've had nothing but success so far. And yeah, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't continue.
Yeah, I mean, given the right time frame, not when Frankie's running around hyper for sure.
Sure.
You know, like I'm not going to do this, you know, when I got other things to attend to, but again, on an overnight time, you know, stuff like that, you know, there may be a couple of more treatments required here. But up to this point, it's even if this is all that happens and nothing improves and I try a few more times, hell of an improvement. And I don't even seek perfection. Like it. It's just I just wanted some relief and I've gotten it. So there you have it. Anyways, Mrs. O, before I give, you know what, I'm going to give Captain Trips the final word on it, but anything you want to throw in here before we're all done?
Well, I also appreciate whoever it was that helped you with this. I'm glad to see that it's working. And I hope that other people can benefit from it too sometime. Because if there are other people suffering, you know, maybe this is all they need instead of one of those pills they got to take every day.
Mm-hmm.
Especially somebody with the PTSD. There's a lot of people suffering. And one other thing, too, is, you know, I have said to Chuck many times that I'm surprised, based on his history, that he's not a serial killer. Because
I've made that comment. Not, I don't think I said serial killer, but I think I said I was. I mean, as
psychopath.
He came through it as well as he has. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a testament to your own your own soul, I guess. That, you know, that didn't happen. But not everybody's as lucky. I mean, look at the Iceman, for crying out loud. He happens to be my favorite psychopath. And you look at his history, and there's a lot of similarity there. What makes one man snap and the other one not?
Richard Kuklinski,
it could help them. What's that?
Richard Kuklinski, also known as the Iceman. Interesting character.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I identify some of what that guy is. I do identify some of what he is from the outside. Now, you recently did a study on that, too. And he is somebody who's fascinating to me. Was housed at in Trenton in New Jersey in the state prison there for a while. But fascinating character and almost textbook. How do you create a sociopath? And I get where he was coming from. But no, I just... I don't think it's a testament to anything except luck, really, because I was lucky that I could hold on to some of my humanity through some things. And, you know, I think I came very, very close to losing it, though, many occasions. But either way, I'm just grateful to not be in that dead zone. Anyhow... Captain Trips, anything you want to add here? Because I really appreciate your indulgence, your patience, and you know, it has been great for you to do this with me. I know we had a little scheduling thing where it took a little while and all that, but
that's my schedule. It sucks. I'm honored that you invited me in for this. I'm very glad you did it, and I'm even, you know, I'm thrilled that it's worked so well for you. You know, I figured it was going to help. I'm, you know, really happy at how well it helped. I think you got so much more out of it. Well, I mean, you've even admitted you've gotten so much more out of it than you expected. You know, you went in for, you used it for one specific reason, but not only did it fix, it seems like it put a lot of other things, you know, put a lot of other things in place for you as well. So I think that's great. And again, you know, honored to be involved.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. And, you know, I went through the stuff with regular pharmaceuticals, your mainstream pharmaceuticals. I mean, I was court ordered to take that stuff. I took it as a teenager. I tried it again as an adult. I had been through the therapy circles. I'd been through group therapy sessions. You know, that when I got thrown into a PTSD group at one point, it was just me in a room full of Vietnam veterans when I was a teenager. That was kind of helpful. Because, you know, these were men who went through the same thing as me. Psychologically, I wasn't in war, but psychologically, they accepted that I was the same as them. And that was a big thing for me, probably for a few reasons, but, you know, we'll leave that for another day. The thing is that, honestly, I had tried a lot of different things. I had tried to seek happiness in my life. I had tried to, you know, deal with it a whole bunch of different ways. Self-medicating? Yes, I did that too. You know, I got hooked on opiates because I was in constant pain, and they were prescribed to me by a doctor. And then that led to some other things, and it's not as though I was unaccustomed to utilizing all kinds of substances just to take a break from who I was.
Sure.
But I had, you know, outside of getting addicted to cigarettes and 7 or 8 years on opiates, you know, it just, nothing worked to do anything. not in a long-term sense, and not even for as long as this has been. Because here's the thing. We talked about this, you know, okay, maybe it was March or April that I started doing this, and we are now halfway through June. I have not had an internal, psychological, emotional period of peace like this that I can remember. It has not been there before. And I don't know what to say about it except that I got to relax. I've been able to sleep. A lot of these things have improved, and I had almost given up hope on improvement of any kind.
Sure you have.
So,
or had.
The key message that I want to give to everybody, and here's where it does sound a little like advice. Don't stop trying to improve that situation. The thing that hangs on you, if you're depressed, if you're in chronic pain, if you're suffering from PTSD, for real, not just the general term everybody throws around. Again, I'm going to show a little bit of anger at that. If you're actually suffering from trauma, physical, mental, spiritual, psychological, whatever, surrender never has to be an option. And that is the way I'm going to leave it. Captain Trips, Mrs. O, all of you guys for listening. Yeah, I held silent there for a second. And isn't that unusual? Anyway, guys, no matter who you are, where you are, remember, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. And if you listen to this entire series, boy, do I appreciate the fact that you have suffered through it with me. Anyway, I appreciate it. Take care, everybody.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
What would I do? Revelation through conversation. In a radio show / podcast. You want the good news? Listen to the Ocelli Effect. Chuck Ocelli is the most underrated voice in all media. News, education, and entertainment. The Daily Bread from Ocelli.com. Go there. Save yourself from ignorance. Ocelli.com. Revelation through conversation. Ocelli.com. Jesus.